Did you know that on a global average, 20% of water resources go to industrial uses first rather than to families and communities for everyday use? In the U.S., that rate is even higher at 40%. With more families indoors during the pandemic, everyday residential water usage has increased, causing critics of corporate water usage to ask, how can we make the most of the water that we have? According to conservationist John Grizz of Nine Power Clean Water, the answer isn't in more regulation for industry, but instead in incentivizing industry to act as better stewards for most of our precious resource. He spoke with the Conversation's Harrison Patino on this issue.
Now, the thing that's interesting is that industry is supposed to serve society, not the other way around, but industry has people that are paid to ensure their interest. And the rest of us are kind of cobbled together grassroots folks. Now, we need industry and they need the water, but what we need to do is help industry do a better job of recycling what they're already using instead of fresh water dispose, because that would leave more water for the rest of us. So that's kind of our basic premise, you know, on our look at this topic.
Now, with 40% of that water going to corporate and industrial use, what becomes of that water?
Well, it, you know, quite often it's used in manufacturing, or it's the result of, you know, use of mining or oil and gas production, all things that make modern society run. So, you know, this is sort of the problem with people being against the oil and gas industry. You know, without the oil and gas industry, our society wouldn't be here. Now, we probably wouldn't have 7 billion people on the planet either, because we couldn't feed them, they would have died of disease, they wouldn't have had the right shelter. I mean, our tradition over the last 2 years, our exploitation over the last 200 years of oil and gas products, hydrocarbons, has really allowed modern society to flourish. But as with everything else, as with a bunch of kids with a case of beer on a Saturday night, the reckoning comes the next day. And so now what we have is sort of industry first. And we do regulate them, but it definitely is industry first, because that's the economic engine, right? Can't straddle the economic engine. Instead of just throwing regulations at them, I think there's a new way, a better way of dealing with industry and its impact on the planet, and that's in showing them how they can save money. Because there's a lot of inefficiencies about the reuse or use of natural resources, whether it's air, water, soil, right? The three big things that we need to sustain human life on the planet and all the other life that we benefit from.
Now, I think when you say there that criticism for the oil and natural gas industries, industries like that, I think it's less blind criticism towards the industry as a whole, but more a criticism for not having a more responsible stewardship of the resources that they consume.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, unfortunately, we've kind of trapped all of industry into follow the regulation. This idea that came about 30 or 40, maybe 50 years ago, that companies exist to increase shareholder value, and the only shareholder value they can count is money, is kind of old-fashioned. Industry exists to increase shareholder value can also mean quality of life, or the way that they spend money, or the way they use resources. Because, you know, we're obviously more interconnected now than ever before, but it's not just electrons over wires that we call the internet. It's the fact that our weather is more connected, you know, now. Climate is. You can see the spread of viruses very fast because of air transportation. All this stuff needs to be taken as a whole. And, you know, I know we need strict regulations so that industry knows when they cross the line. But there are ways that we can incentivize industry to use the resources they have access to better and to help give back to the community they're in.
Well, without getting too much into the weeds here over the issue of corporate responsibility, more locally in Hawaii, do you have a sense of the more significant industrial entities that have a stake in Hawaii's freshwater reserves?
I do realize that the sort of traditional views on the land need to be fully embraced, because that leads one into a very conscious, conservation-wise approach to using resources. Instead of slash and burn and exploit, it needs to be, you know, especially given the small, relatively small land mass that is Hawaii and the large number of people there, the impact of just humans being there is enormous. So there needs to be a nice balance between what's going on with humans and what's going on with industry.
Well, in particular here, Mahipono has been under a lot of scrutiny locally here for their use of water, especially in Maui County.
This is something that I was kind of amazed at. I kind of thought that agribusiness greatly outweighed, in terms of food production, small traditional farming families. But they don't. It's these collections, these almost like co-ops, that really dominate the farming scene. And so, you know, individual farmers are getting dragged into policies that they don't agree with because the co-op is doing that.
You bring up this idea that we need to rethink how industrial purposes and corporations act as stewards over the water, but a lot of corporate entities have not acted as great stewards. So this idea of having people build up trust towards them with more of a conservation-minded approach, that seems like something of an uphill battle.
Yeah, it is, until you start buying shares in their company, until you start electing people to their board of directors that care about these issues, until we incentivize the companies to do what's right. And this is not just tax deductions. There are other ways, you know, where it's sort of the idea of carbon credits, but you do it in eco credits, where you acknowledge that, you know, in this one facility, the company doesn't have the money to invest in more modern machinery. We're going to have a higher impact. And it's balanced out by having a lighter footprint at the mine factory location 10 miles down the road. That kind of thing needs to be taken into account. Eventually, I mean, if you look at the last couple hundred years and what we've gone through from a helter-skelter industrial revolution, no environmental safeguards whatsoever, to what we have now, we've made an incredible amount of progress. And this gives me hope. We have gotten really better, and we can get even better. Green is not a destination. It's a process. So going green is more of a journey. So again, I think it's possible to incentivize companies to do better, but we've got to stop marking progress of a company or a company's value based on their share price alone. And that is a fundamental change. So instead of saying, well, we're going to take on big industry, why don't we take on how big industry operates and why they operate that way?
Now, John, as you talk about stock prices here and the value of shares, it's interesting because I think a lot of the reason that people are trepidatious to accept corporations or industries as responsible safeguards with water is because they fundamentally view water as a commodity. And I think that really clashes with the idea that many people have that water is a basic human right. I mean, where do you think along those lines?
Well, I definitely believe in the latter as well. I think, though, that, you know, here's the problem with water. You know, people expect it to be free. The second concept is the fact that we're in a closed loop here. The amount of water really hasn't changed over millions of years. It's just in a different place or a different form. I think a bigger problem we've got is that America is essentially, you know, a 16-year-old with a credit card and a fast car. And there is no long-term future. Our federal budget is not even an annual budget anymore. It's a series of bills that gets us kicks a can 6 months down the road. So how do you have an environmental policy, or how do you maintain an energy policy, or a natural resource policy that goes outside just regulations on quality? I mean, that was the issue with Maui and the Supreme Court back in April. You know, they had one interpretation of the Clean Water Act, and the Supreme Court said, well, actually, you're going to have to look at both the Clean Water Act and also the impact on groundwater. Can't just use one over the other. You're going to have to take into account the fact that this is all one big interconnected system, and that the water you're dumping down disposal wells eventually ends up in the ocean. Therefore, it, you know, it is violating the Clean Water Act. You've got to have a permit to do that. And the permitting process itself ensures, you know, some basic safeguards are put in place.
Well, I'm glad you bring up that local instance here. There's this notion that water is fundamentally sacred to the residents, especially farmers. So this disproportionate industrial water usage, it really seems to run counter to that belief of water as something sacred. And I know you're saying that, you know, water is a fundamental human right, but we have to address the commodification of it in some way. Here locally, though, those two notions run pretty counter to each other.
I'm not sure, you know, how those two different positions are going to juxtapose themselves when what you're talking about is, from an economic standpoint, considered to be a commodity. How do you build emotion into the price or the access to a commodity? It's very difficult to rectify that. I'm not pretending I have an answer there, but I do know that large groups of people working together can get things done, whether that's against the sugarcane factory down the street or some big agribusiness down the road.
So, swinging big picture here, what do you identify some of the biggest challenges towards changing our global perception of water conservation and how we can do a better job at it?
There's a bunch of moving parts here. One is that the changing climate that's brought on by industrialization is putting the water in different places and, in some cases, making the water not usable for particular use. So you're not going to change moving water. Water's so cheap. You know, it's the plane full of water, the plane full of diamonds equation. You can't afford to fly water somewhere, but you can sure afford to fly a bunch of diamonds somewhere. And it's because it is somewhat ubiquitous. But I think there's a real struggle now to match the resource quality and availability with the economic activity. That's where I think you're going to see some necessary changes happen. But if there's just not water in a certain place, then you cannot farm there, and we need to help you move or help you adjust to a new economic reality. And that water's not going to come back unless we spend a ton of money to move water, put in infrastructure to move water. So I think, you know, it's matching up maybe the reality of the resource with the economic activity there. And that's one thing, you know, we need to consider. It doesn't mean we have to forcibly move people, but it does mean that you've got to do things in a place that makes sense. You know, people rail about manufacturing jobs going overseas. The U.S. is no different than any other developing country. This always happens in a developing economy, where the lower-skilled, lower-wage positions go somewhere else if you've got access to it, because people's quality of life went up. So, you know, it's hard for me to figure out somebody railing against the, you know, low-wage jobs going to China when these people have higher-wage jobs here. And if they don't, we better figure out how to get them into those positions. You know, and whether that's education or whether that's sort of changing societal norms, that's the actual reality on the ground.
You've been listening to conservationist John Grizz of Nine Power Clean Water talking with the Conversation's Harrison Patino about corporate water usage and how American industries can better manage the resources they consume.